Good afternoon, everyone. It's a real pleasure to be here, and I would like to extend my congratulations in advance to all the Torch Award winners who represent what is truly the best in our Brazos Valley business community. What a beautiful event this is. And I have absolutely no desire to spoil this happy occasion, but I do need to deliver some bad news that affects all of us as American citizens and all of you as business leaders. The bad news is that never in my memory has America been more in peril internationally than it is right now. Boston was just the beginning. We will be hit again. It will be inside our own borders. It will be a weapon of mass destruction, and it will be horrific. No region of our country is immune. No sector of our economy is immune. The emergence of the homegrown, radicalized, Islamic fundamentalist terrorists is our worst nightmare come true. And terrorism, of course, is not the only threat our country faces. North Korea is an unstable state with nuclear weapons, a visceral hatred of the United States, and long-range missiles that will soon be able to reach the United States itself. Iran will follow shortly as a nuclear weapons-capable hostile state, one with a history of supporting terrorist groups. In the cyber area, American Express, J.P. Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, and Bank America have all been hit by major cyber attacks in the last 6 months. Attacks that took down websites and threatened the integrity of financial transactions. The overwhelming majority of those attacks can be traced to China. And this trend will continue. And other financial businesses and institutions will be hit. All of you are at risk. I believe that my organization, the CIA, has a key role to play in all of these battles. I believe that we will win or lose these battles based in large measure on how good our intelligence is. So Craig Miller thought it might be useful, and I hope interesting, to familiarize you a little bit with my organization, the CIA, who we are, what it is that we really do, because it's a world that most Americans know very little about. And often what they think they do know is badly distorted by the movies, the TV shows, the books, and the other popular media. Before doing anything else, though, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to make it absolutely clear where I stand. I believe that the greatest and most powerful country in the world, ours, must have the very best intelligence in the world to protect its citizens and to defend its vital interests. And so if that's true, and America needs intelligence, then it's also true that America needs spies. And I'm proud to say that my wife Meredith and I were spies for the CIA and for our country for 31 years. And you know, even now, it feels strange to be standing before a group talking openly about spying. Because for the entire 30 plus years that Meredith and I were on active duty in the CIA, we were undercover. So we could not tell anyone where we really worked or what we were really doing. During all those years, my parents did not know that I was a CIA officer. And Meredith's parents did not know. And none of our friends knew. And I think you can imagine what a shock it was to everyone when, by regulation, we were required to come out from undercover for me to accept the professorship at the George Bush School of Government and Public Service. No one had suspected anything. By coming out, unfortunately, we lost some friends. Because some of our friends could not or would not accept that we've been lying to them all those years. They felt that we had somehow betrayed their friendship or violated their trust. And I really regret that, because I think what they did not fully appreciate was how vitally important cover is to us in the CIA. And I'm sure the reasons for that are obvious to all of you. First of all, we need cover for effectiveness. You're not going to be a very effective spy overseas if everybody knows who you are. So you have to pretend to be someone else. You have to pose as something else. And of course, that's what we call your cover. And secondly, we need cover for safety. Because what we do for a living in the CIA, what Meredith and I did, espionage and covert action for our country overseas, can be, and in our case often was, a dangerous profession. And so you need cover for the safety and protection of you and your family. Living undercover isn't easy. It's a difficult and demanding way of life. You never really get used to lying to everybody about who you are and what you're doing and leading that double life. It helped me a great deal in living that difficult undercover lifestyle that I met Meredith at the CIA. She was working there when I arrived. And so Meredith already understood the culture of the CIA. She understood the risk we would face in our life together. She understood the sacrifices we'd be called upon to make. And maybe most importantly, Meredith understood in the event we were to marry and to be blessed with children, what the implications would be of raising a family in that kind of lifestyle. I should point out, by the way, here's a tip for you. The CIA is a great place to meet people of the opposite sex. Because when I met Meredith there, I knew she'd had a thorough background investigation. Got regular polygraph exams, and of course, she knew the same thing about me. I was born and raised in Iowa. I graduated from the University of Iowa. When I graduated, I took a commission in the United States Navy. I served for 4 years as an officer aboard guided missile destroyers and frigates, and I really loved the Navy and seriously thought about staying in, but finally decided I wanted to go back home. I wanted to go back to Iowa. So I left the Navy. I applied for law school at the University of Iowa, was accepted. And that was my dream at the time. I wanted to get my law degree, practice what I thought was an honorable profession in a small county seat town in Iowa, serve my community, maybe run for local office. At that time, this was before Meredith, find a nice Iowa girl, settle down, and raise a family, what I thought then and still do is the perfect setting for that small town, rural America. And I was on track for that dream until my last year of law school, when the CIA found me and offered me a position in what we call the clandestine service. I was intrigued by that offer, and I eventually decided to accept it, but I still went ahead and finished law school. And I still took and passed the Iowa bar exam, because I remember distinctly as I was packing up in Iowa City to head east that I was determined that I would do this CIA thing for just a couple years. And I guaranteed myself after 2 or 3 years I'm going to go back to Iowa, pursue that original dream that I'd had. Well, it didn't quite work out that way. And I don't want to belabor the point, but the truth is that service to our country and the art of espionage quickly got into my blood, and I realized very early on that this was what I wanted to do with my life, to help ensure that this great country of ours had the very best intelligence in the world. And you know, when Meredith and I look back on our long CIA career now, we have no regrets. In fact, we have a nice, warm feeling to have been able to have served something we believed in so deeply and to have made a difference. Like all new CIA officers, then as now, it hasn't changed. I had 2 full years of training before my first overseas assignment. And the training is really good. Most of it takes place at this undercover base in Virginia that we call the farm. And down at the farm, a lot of the training is paramilitary. So we learn about a lot of different weapons. Weapons that in some cases, those of us who have been in the military, we are already familiar with. But also some very ingenious weapons, things designed exclusively for us by our engineers, things that did not look like weapons, things that look like what you might carry or wear on your person every day, but when modified by our engineers, were very deadly. We learned our own form of hand-to-hand combat. Now let's not beat around the bush here. We were trained to kill with our hands. We learned about explosives, how to blow things up, and that's because sabotage has been, and I believe always will be, one of our important missions. We learned how to jump out of airplanes. And that makes sense too, doesn't it? Because if we're going to be inserting, as we often do, a single operative or a covert action team into a remote hostile area, sometimes the only way to do that or the best way to do that is from the air. So that's why we continue to require, even today, that all of our officers be fully jump qualified. At the farm, we also learn what we call the tools of the trade. So we learn things like surveillance, clandestine photography, how to tap a phone, secret writing, how to bug a room, what we call flaps and seals, how to open packages and envelopes without leaving a trace, lock picking. All the things that you read about in the spy novels and that may not seem real to us, but for us in the CIA are part of our everyday skill set. After all that training, as good as it is, you're still not ready for that first overseas assignment. What more might you need? Foreign language. So if your language is not up at the very high level we require for the country you're being assigned to, you're going to get some additional one-on-one, total immersion, intensive language training. I'm biased, of course, but I happen to think that the CIA has the very best foreign language training in the world. If you have the aptitude, and you do, or we wouldn't have recruited you in the first place, we can take you from zero to full operational fluency in a very short time. It's grueling, believe me, but we will teach you the language. The CIA taught Meredith and me four different foreign languages, French, Russian, German, and Spanish, and that's not at all unusual. That's a very typical CIA career. You're getting closer to that first overseas assignment, but there's one last thing that you have to do. It's very important, and we've touched on it briefly already, and that's cover. We're going to be assigning you a cover. And you're actually going to have to do that cover job so that you look right to the outside world. So that's why we match the cover we give you with your background, your interest, your education, so that it is something that you'll be comfortable doing, and also so that family and friends who know you well will consider it plausible that that's something you might actually be doing. In my case, shortly after Meredith and I were married, we were assigned to Paris. And I went out under international banking cover. Banking's really good cover, isn't it, Craig? Maybe I shouldn't, the secret's out, I shouldn't have said anything, right, Jerry? No one in the Paris branch of that bank where I was working knew the truth. So what did that mean? It meant I had to go to that bank every morning, put in a full day's job as a banker, keep my unwitting banking supervisors happy, make a lot of money for that bank, and then do my spying on nights and weekends. So you've all figured it out, haven't you? Yes, that's right. In effect, you are doing two full-time jobs. And the implications of that on lifestyle, family life, marriage, and children are obvious. You cannot do this kind of work unless you have a spouse who is as deeply committed to our country and to the mission of the CIA as you are, and who is willing to accept that level of sacrifice. It won't work otherwise. Of course, in my case, it was easy because Meredith was also one of us and totally supportive. Meredith and I had many different identities when we were in Paris. We had bogus passports, driver's licenses, credit cards, diplomas, life histories, family members, addresses, phone numbers, pocket litter, disguises, to go with each of those different identities. All of this spy gear we hid in our apartment in Paris in what we call concealment devices. And those concealment devices might look like an ordinary piece of furniture, but in fact, had actually been manufactured by CIA carpenters. So they had concealment cavities buried inside them for us to hide all of this incriminating material. And why was that so important? Well, because what Meredith and I were doing in France was a crime. Not under U.S. law. We would never violate U.S. law. We all swear an oath to the United States Constitution. But under French law. Espionage is a crime in every country. In fact, under the French Criminal Code, if you are caught spying on French territory, regardless of what country you're doing it for, you're liable up to 40 years in prison. And that is not an idle concern for those of us like Meredith and me who go out under deep cover without diplomatic immunity. Because we know going into it that if we get caught, we will be on our own. If we get caught, we will do the time. If we get caught, in almost every instance, the CIA and the United States government will disavow any knowledge of us. And of course, that's the way it has to be to protect, first and foremost, our country's interests. Meredith and I sadly have dear friends from the CIA who had the misfortune of getting caught in the act of spying overseas without diplomatic immunity, and they're in prison right now. And we do not know when, if ever, we will get them out. Cover becomes a big issue, too, when you have children. Think about that. What do you do about your children? And the CIA leaves that up to us. I'm very grateful that it does. We can tell our children the truth or not as we see fit. And many of our colleagues and friends in the CIA go through an entire career undercover, retire undercover, and never tell their children the truth. And for whatever reason, that works best for them, and that's fine, that's their decision. Others of us, though, aren't comfortable lying to our own children forever. We love them, of course, and we're proud of what it is that we've really been doing for our country. And we like to share that with our children if we can. But if we are going to tell them the truth, we can't do it when they're too young. And why is that? They might talk. We're also concerned that if they're too small, it might be too much for them. It might be too frightening for younger children to know that they are part of a CIA family overseas and that there's danger associated with that. So if we do tell our children the truth, we usually wait until late high school or early college years. And that seems to work best. How do you think the kids react? Well, in various ways, as you can imagine, we have these dear friends in the CIA. We were talking about this. They said when they told their daughter the truth when she was about 17 or 18, her reaction was to run to her room, slam her door, jump on her bed, and cry nonstop for quite some time because her mom and dad had lied to her. Her mom and dad hadn't trusted her. And she was brokenhearted. She felt betrayed by her own parents. And unfortunately, that sense of betrayal is not uncommon among CIA kids when we tell them the truth. Every time I think about this, I'm reminded of John and Nancy, good CIA friends of Meredith and mine. We served together in Moscow. We were reminiscing on this subject, and they said when they told their daughter Leslie the truth, when she was about the same age, 18 or so, she reacted with relief. I said, John, what do you mean by relief? He said, well, when we told Leslie we'd been in the CIA all those years, she said, well, thank goodness, Dad, that's what it is. Because I had always sensed that there was this big family secret. And I was afraid that maybe you and Mom were brother and sister or something. Well, in our case, our hand was forced when Meredith and I were serving in Vienna. You may or may not know this, but Vienna, Austria has been and continues to be a real battleground of espionage. And Meredith and I were doing some really aggressive operations against some Iranian terrorists that were operating in and through Vienna. And to this day, we don't know how, but somehow those Iranian terrorists found out that the CIA was behind their problems, and that I, Jim Olson, was the CIA chief of station in Vienna. And so these Iranian terrorists sent me a letter. And very ominously, they mailed it to our home address in Vienna, where Meredith and I were living with our three children. And I'll never forget that letter. I've kept it all these years. It started out, "Dear Infidel Dog." Don't you just hate letters like that? Anybody else ever get one? Father David, you ever get a letter like that? Close? Yeah. You kind of know right off it's not going to be friendly, right? It was a death threat. It was a serious death threat against me by name, against Meredith by name, and against each of our three children by name. And I wasn't worried about myself. I had all the training, took all the appropriate precautions, was always armed, always wore my vest, my car was armored, I had bodyguards whenever I needed them. And I hope you're not going to misinterpret what I say now, particularly you ladies, because it may not sound very loving or chivalrous on my part, but I wasn't worried about Meredith either. Meredith was well-trained. She was more than capable of taking care of herself. So our real concern, of course, was our children. And even though it was earlier than we would have liked, because our oldest, Jeremy, was only 16 at the time, we thought that because of the death threat, we needed to bring him into the picture. So we took Jeremy aside one day. We sat him down in an acoustically secure room. You all have acoustically secure rooms in your houses? We said, "Listen, Jeremy, Mom and Dad are in the CIA. We are a CIA family. There has been a death threat against our family, and we need your help." That's kind of a lot to put on a 16-year-old, isn't it? You need to watch out for your little brother and sister. Make certain you always have them in sight, that you always get on the same school bus. You need to be alert to your surroundings. If anybody's watching you or loitering, you have to get in touch with someone in a position of authority right away. Jeremy reacted with pride, as we'd hoped he would. He did a really good job of watching out for his little brother and sister, and with his help and a lot of other precautions we put on the children that they weren't aware of, we were able to stay and finish our assignment in Vienna. I can tell you we all felt a lot better when we got those Iranian terrorists. And then when they were a little bit older, we were able to tell Joshua and Hillary the truth. And they reacted with pride too. And speaking of pride, I hope you won't mind if I mention how proud Meredith and I are of our three children. Jeremy, the oldest, went on to become a United States Marine Corps officer. And then when he came out, he went into campus ministry, which he felt called to do. Our second son, Josh, was a United States Navy officer, and he's out now in graduate school working toward his goal of becoming a high school teacher. And our youngest, our daughter Hillary, chose to be a missionary in Ethiopia. So it's very gratifying to Meredith and me as parents to know that our children had all chosen careers of service to others in one form or another. Meredith and I were talking about our children the other night, and I said to her, "You know what? None of our children will ever make any money." And Meredith said, "That's okay. They've chosen the right path. There are a lot more important things in life than money." And of course, she's right. When I tell my CIA friends that Hillary is a missionary in Ethiopia, they say, "Sure she is, Jim." I think she really is, but I might not know. It's kind of funny. When we told Hillary we were in the CIA, she was a teenager. So she took that on board, and then a couple days later, she came back to me, all serious. And she said, "Dad, I want to know the truth." She said, "I want to know if you ever traced any of my boyfriends. I said, Hillary, of course not. I would never do that. That would be a violation of your privacy. So I lied to my own daughter. You're darn right I traced those guys. I think I would be negligent as a father of a daughter if I had the capability and I didn't do it. Just don't tell Hillary, all right? Well, Mary and I served in many different countries. Some we talk about, some we don't. We worked against a lot of different targets. Our number one target over the years was certainly the Soviet KGB. But we also worked at other times against the Chinese, Iranians, Cubans, North Koreans, terrorists, narcotics traffickers, nuclear proliferators, organized crime, practically anything that you can think of relating to our national security, we probably worked against at one time or another. It has been a wonderful journey. And Meredith and I both say the same thing, and that is that if we had the chance, we'd like nothing better than to be able to go back and do it all over again. We really envy young people today, particularly the young men and women that I have the privilege of working with at the Bush School. Because Meredith and I know that if they choose, they have the opportunity today to serve in things like the CIA or the FBI or the military or similar organizations. And we know that if they choose to do that, that they will have the same deep sense of satisfaction in their careers of service to our country that Meredith and I had in ours. I'd like to close by saying something that I think is really important, and ladies and gentlemen, is really the message that I was hoping to be able to leave you with today. We cannot and should not forget that our country is at war right now, and it will be a long, bloody, and deadly war. We have not yet seen the worst of the war on terrorism. But there is good news. And the good news is that we will win this war because of our superb military, our police, our firefighters, our emergency responders, and our intelligence personnel. And we will win this war above all because our best young people today, like every previous generation of Americans, are stepping forward in droves to answer the great call, the great threat, the great challenge of their generation. So I'd like to say, may God bless all of those young people. May God bless all of you, your businesses, and your families. May God bless all of our men and women in uniform, our police, our firefighters, and our first responders. May God bless all of our men and women undercover. And may God bless the United States of America. Thank you very much. It's a real pleasure to be here. Thank you.